This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast 110. And I'm here with my colleagues and co-hosts, Alex De Groot at De Groot Media. That's our professional, by the way, from the city. And we've got our other professional from the city, but not in the investment game, but more in the commercial infrastructure and everything else, tendering, you can name it. He's got his fingers in every pie there. Henry Viola Hare at HT Viola. Thank you all for coming back to this format that we're putting out regarding the Twin Peaks Investing podcast. The day is the 21st of September. This is a Thursday. It's now 6:15. We're recording this late because of lots of different things that have been going on all week. We've all been very, very busy with all manner of different things. So the Thursday night recording. I'm going to go straight to Alex with this now because we've had the BOE come out and say, we're going to pause for the first time in, I think, November 2021, Alex. We've had a consecutive period of interest rates rising, bang, 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 bang. And it's the first pause we've had since November 2021. So we're stopping at 5.25 for the minute, 5.25%. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we had a helpful print on the inflation numbers yesterday or the day before yesterday on the CPI, which I think came in lower than expected for August. And so I think that's given the BOE, that's put the doves in control in terms of the decision making over this latest decision over rates. And If this is the top of the interest rate cycle, I can see investors starting to look towards cyclicals. I think my only word of caution would be that we've been here before, and the recent trend on inflation has had a sort of habit of surprising us on the downside and then surprising us on the upside. So I think it's a bit early to say that we're out of the woods. I think it's a bit early to say that rates will be down at 4 within 6 months. I think it's a bit early to get complacent, but it's got to be seen as good news. And it's got to be good for mortgage holders. And in terms of stock selection and asset allocation, it's got to be good for house builders and any of the interest rate sensitive type companies. Now, one thing to flag on the pod is that this is investment speak. This is analyst speak. There's a big difference between the impact, the lagged impact of a rate cut or a rate hike and the actual impact. That's 3-6 months down the line. But the market will interpret this as us being nearer the top of the interest rate cycle. So it's about interpretation. It's about messaging. And I think the BOE are reacting to that decent inflation print earlier in the week. So it's got to be seen as good news. And I think it's broadly consistent with what we're seeing in other markets internationally, where there's a feeling that monetary policy, which has been ratcheted up very aggressively for 2 years, as you say, is now finally beginning to break demand, breaking demand badly for consumers and for corporates. And so it's done its job, and it's probably time to pause. And generally, flattening or falling interest rates are good for stock markets. So they'd be my initial thoughts.
No, thank you. Thank you for that. And it was noticeable. I'm going to go to Henry in a second, that I was tracking the markets this morning, and from the open, the markets went up and we were sitting towards, I scrambled some numbers down earlier, 7,730-ish we were at a peak this morning, early morning peak. And then everybody got a bit worried and the markets dipped right down towards 7,676 at 11:52. The announcement was made at 12. And then the markets jumped 70 whole points to 7,746. The FTSE 100 ended up closing at 7,678. So almost back towards the low. So we had that journey up in the morning, down before the announcement, up 70 points, back down another 70 points almost again. And the markets actually finished down, FTSE 100 finished down 53 points today. So there's a lot of volatility throughout the day and folks don't know what to make of it. Some stocks got a really good rally between 12 and 1 and then gave it up again at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock this afternoon, this evening. What are your thoughts then, Henry? What are your thoughts about the BOE and having a little pause? Who it helps out, who it doesn't help out?
Yeah, I was very surprised that the market did what it did, actually. We had a very good rally yesterday when the inflation print came out low and I was breathing a sigh of relief. And today, I'd given it all back. It felt as though the market, any gains that anybody had got, they were selling into, and the selling pressure just outweighed the buying pressure, and down we went. I was honestly expecting the market to have another rally today, especially with the print staying at 5.25%. I think the overall feeling from the people I'm talking to anyway is that people have got this sort of institutional memory now of a bad market for 2 years, and so they're snatching at profits at the first chance they get. And I think that's what the index has shown us today. I also have a suspicion that we may well see rates going higher than this. I've got a feeling that inflation may prove to be stickier. It's falling. But if there's a sudden flurry of demand in the economy, we could see inflation start to tick up. And so the Bank of England is going to have to put rates up even further. So it'll be interesting to see where we are by sort of January, February next year.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think I've touched on it going back almost 18 months ago now, saying that inflation is going to be stickier. I suspect it's going to be persistent for a little while. And I think we shouldn't get too far ahead of ourselves, like you say, regarding this is actually just a pause and they're going to assess the situation and see what happens October, November, December. I think the retail numbers for sales and consumers and so on and so forth, what people actually spend over Christmas, will be quite telling as to what they do at the beginning of 2024. But I think it's going to stay higher for longer, if that makes sense. Going back to what Alex was saying, will they get it down to 4% by the middle of next summer? I don't know. They need some growth. We need some growth, mate, across the board. And they can't just rely on people buying houses and buying stuff they don't need, you know? So we'll see. So AIM today fell 0.96%. We're down at 739, so we're still some ways away from that magic 800 that it needs. And it appears, you know, Alex, got to bring you some more bad news, mate. More takeovers in the AIM space. Yeah. We've had DX, yeah? The logistics
DX.
Firm.
Yeah, DX, yeah.
So that's going back to the 11th of September. Possible all-cash offer at 48.5 pence there. HIG Capital, that's HIG Capital. For those of you that don't know, that's my investment vehicle. So I've made an offer of 290 million to buy DX. We'll see what happens with that. They've got until October the 9th to make a formal offer for that. But it looks like they might get it. I'm not sure what people think about the bid. I've seen people that say that's another low ball offer. I've seen other people are going, I'm just relieved to be getting out. Any thoughts, Henry, Alex? What are your thoughts on this particular offer for DX?
Not specifically on DX itself, although that does sound like a reasonable premium. But just as a general rule for listeners, as a general rule for most public company boards, you're going to need to see probably a minimum of a 30% premium to recommend a cash offer. That's the sort of general benchmark. In other words, if something's trading at, 30p, you're going to need to see 40p as your bare minimum as a board to recommend it. That's the sort of investment banking golden rule. 30%. It's hard for boards to really recommend anything less than that unless there's a specific reason related to shareholding or performance or something. You're then into the sort of second derivative of that argument, which is basically that we're in this weird world at the moment where if you're owning small AIM stocks, you've got the sort of parallel risk of a delisting. I don't know if you guys saw yesterday, but a little company called BrandShield announced it was going to delist. There's no tender offer for the shares. There's nothing that minority shareholders can do. They're just going to delist and cancel the shares. This was actually announced just days after they'd raised 2.5 million of new equity. Make of that what you will. But
wrong on every level, mate. Wrong on every level.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But I suppose my point would be that I think we've now had about 10 delistings announced over the last 12 months or so. The one I knew particularly well was called iEnergizer last year, IBPO, which was a business outsourcing company predominantly based in India. And they delisted, no tender offer for the shares. Minority shareholders were just left up the creek without a paddle. And then we've had BrandShield yesterday. I know there've been others recently as well. So I think you've got boards in this sort of slightly odd mindset at the moment where if they're not seeing liquidity in shares, they're almost tempted to just throw the towel in. And then if you're a minority shareholder, you're thinking, well, I don't want to be a shareholder in a private company with no liquidity. My only opportunity to trade the shares might be via JP Jenkins, but there might be no liquidity. I know you've had interviews with JP in the past, Pete, and it is a very important tool for investors, but there's no real visibility over bargain sizes or anything. So I guess we've got this weird world at the moment where on the one hand, we're getting lots of bid activity, DX Group, Gresham House, so on and so forth, Finsbury Foods. On the other hand, you're getting a number of tiddlers saying, well, sod that for a game of soldiers, we're going to delist. And we're not going to give you anything, we're just going to delist. So it's sort of double risk for shareholders. On the one hand, you can benefit from a nice fat premium, happy days. On the other hand, you might be left owning stock in a tiddler and have no exit. And it just does highlight the risk of investing in AIM, which historically was called the Wild West. I always thought that was a bit harsh, but nonetheless, we're getting evidence almost daily on the RNSs of this sort of corporate activity. So mind your cards. But look, there's no doubt that private equity remains awash with dry powder. And I think most boards, to be honest, are probably minded to accept reasonable offers because it is a tricky economic climate and growth is hard to come by. So I would expect more deal flow. I would expect more delistings. And sad to say, I would expect generally the number of public companies in the UK to continue to contract, to continue to get smaller until we've got a bit more growth on the horizon. So that's my sort of...
I think I read somewhere this week that year to date, FTSE and AIM takeovers and delistings are around 80.
Wow. I mean, that's...
It's a big number.
That's a lot. And to the best of my knowledge, I think we've had 3 IPOs this year, maybe more. I mean, Cab Payments IPO'd July. I think they had figures the other day, current share price about 240. That's trading about £1 off its IPO price. That's the biggest IPO we've had. So we're losing companies and we're not really gaining them via IPOs in the UK. Although one of the things I'll come on to a bit later on the show is obviously that we have now had the Arm IPO, the Instacart IPO in the US. So it's signs of life in the US. But yeah, the UK is tricky. If you own DX or if you own any company that's got a bid, you know, just watch out. Just read what the boards say in their response. That'll normally give you a feel for what happens next. But private equity have got lots of money. So I can't see them going away.
Yeah, I think my concern with the DX side of it is that it's had quite a volatile history. It's done quite a lot regarding trying to shore itself up, buying bits and pieces and doing all the right things of late. And then the first thing I saw after the bid was Gartmore Capital, which is the fund manager that controls around 19% of it, was basically saying, you know, we've had enough. We're backing this bid at 48 pence. So if one of the larger institutions are saying we've had enough, then what does that say for the rest of them? You know, thoughts, Henry? Have you ever seen anything about DX at all?
Not specifically about DX, but on the topic of delistings, it is a concern. You know, I used to hold IBPO a long time ago. I'd got no idea that they delisted, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think this is the thing. If you are a board and you've got the regulatory concerns and you're not seeing share price appreciation and you're not actively raising capital, what's the point of having a listing? It's just another hassle, another headache, another set of regulatory burden that you've got to bear. You know, in the US, there seems to be I don't necessarily agree with the listings they allow on NASDAQ. I think there are some issues around governance there, but certainly from a founder's point of view, it's a much more attractive market to list on. And that's showing. They've got a very, very healthy exchange over there. In contrast to the UK, where we seem to be listing companies, the prices are sliding. I don't think I can name a single IPO in the UK that has managed to sustain a price increase after listing for, you know, sort of 6 months. They nearly all seem to slide, even if there's an initial pop. They're underwater within a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's true. Going back to the takeovers, I think we've had three this week. You've mentioned one of them there, Alex, Finsbury Food. We've also had Rotala have a bid as well. And then the Pendragon one started all over again with Lithia, making a bid for it, a proposal for a business, a core business, then a transition, and also putting the money into its technology side of the business, the dealer management software side of it. So the bid's at 27.4 pence. So that gave that a bit of a rocket on Monday. It's a stock I hold. I bought it for the summer parts, did my research, put my hours of research in there at sub 16p. So I was quite happy with that bid. And it looks to be backed by about 26% of the company at the moment. But the other side of it is that Hedin own 27.5. Because of the way this deal has been structured, they need 51% to get it over the line, either party. Hedin was quiet for a day, then came out yesterday and has bid, I think it was 28 pence per share for the whole lot of the company, with some sort of, you know, we needed some due diligence and we need to sort out some debt side of it. So I think this is going to run for a little while. There'll be some to-ing and fro-ing. And it may end up with a takeout price of about 30 pence or more for one of those two parties. But I don't think it's going to stay independent before March of next year. So I think that's another company we're going to lose regarding Pendragon.
And that's hot on the heels of Lookers, Pete. I seem to recall.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think there's going to be many motor retail companies listed that are independent anymore. They're going to be all part of larger and larger groups. Virtue is going to go at some point, and others have gone before that. So there's going to be very, very, very few left. But yeah, I took a load off the table at 24 pence when the first deal was struck, because I was happy with the 50% and plus that I'd made on the in 3 months since holding it. We'll see what happens with it. I've got a rump of it left. I'll get rid of it, the rest of it, at some point in the next week to couple of months, depending on what all these different wrangles with Hedin and Lithia and Pence. I think they're going to battle it out and they'll end up above 30p, but who knows? We'll see.
Pete and Henry, what's the general, and this is a high level question, but for the dealers, for the motor dealers, is the move towards EVs seen as negative or positive or neutral? I mean, does it matter to them that people buy more electric vehicles, or would they much rather status quo remained? petrol, diesel, blah, blah, blah. Is that a relevant part of the investment story here? Or?
I think the relevant part for this particular investment story is the fact that Lithia have been buying up other dealerships historically, and they are going down the luxury end of the market. Yeah, and they're, I think, the second biggest possibly group in the US as well.
Yeah.
So somebody will correct me on that, I'm sure. But they're huge in America. So that gives these guys at Pendragon a look in over the US. But they're more focused on the luxury side, irrespective of electric cars. I think the concern regarding electric cars is that the ones that are returning them and buying another car are not always going back to buying another electric car. And the value of those electric cars that they purchased 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, has depreciated significantly. So actually, regarding most retailers now that are involved in the car game, motor automotive game, they've actually got a significant number of electric cars that they cannot shift. You know, so the margins are very tight, very small on that space. So they're actually making most of their money now, either in the luxury end of the market, which is not necessarily all electric, of course, and in the servicing side of the market. That's where they're making the bulk of their margins, servicing the vehicles, irrespective of whether electric or diesel or petrol. And, you know, we've had the government coming out already musing about the fact they're going to be nudging things back regarding net zero. And I think it won't be long before they say regarding electric cars, we're going to push that back beyond 2030. So you're going to be selling more and more cars going forward that are not necessarily electric. And we've seen everything else that's saying to us that the rich are getting richer. So they're continuing to buy luxury cars. You know, they're not going to buy, people that have got a Ford are going to run it into the ground, right? The person that's got a Porsche is going to buy another Porsche. That's how far and wide we've got regarding the diversity and, you know, demarcation regarding wealthy and poor.
Got it.
What are your thoughts then, Henry?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, I don't think it matters what cars they're selling as much as that they are selling cars. One ticker that I actually noticed when I was doing some research this week was Ford, a huge US car company, not spoken about very often. I mean, people go on about Tesla like it's the only car maker in business. But if you have a look at Ford, they're doing pretty well. I mean, bumper sales, nice margins, nice dividend. You know, of the two out of Tesla and Ford, well, it caught my eye, I'll put it that way.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
They were very hot to respond to the net zero news yesterday, weren't they, Ford? Which we got yesterday afternoon.
And I think Sorry, the other consideration on net zero, you know, I'm in London and there's a huge amount of controversy about this ultra low emission zone malarkey. Now, I'm not going to go into the politics of all of that, but certainly there is a question if people are going to be charged £12.50 a day for owning a petrol or a diesel car or whatever and driving it around, either they'll ditch the car or they'll buy an electric or they'll do something. But if these zones get rolled out nationally, I think there's going to be, you know, less demand for the petrol vehicles.
I have to agree with you. And I think, unfortunately, we're in a situation where London needs to raise lots of, you know, it's another tax, isn't it, essentially? So raise more more funds for running the city and doing what they want. And it's a difficult one when you've got to do that. But we would hope that that money is being reinvested in what should be the infrastructure going forward for electric vehicles. But that's not what I'm hearing at the moment. I'm hearing that actually there's still this anxiety issue around electric vehicles and actually going from A to B and not have to worry about, you know, a fast charge point or the infrastructure being there. We're miles away from that. That's where the money should be going. Anything from the ULEZ sort of, you know, revenue stream. And we may or may not see that. Right. I'm going to go to you first, Alex, and ask you what stock you've got for us today as a research idea, what you've been looking at, and what our listeners around the world can look forward to hearing from you regarding a stock that might be of interest to them.
Yes, well, this is hot off the press, because this isn't what I was going to talk about yesterday. and I cannot claim that my research here is complete, but I think this is a stock that people should have a look at. And I think you guys may have talked about it in the past. Strix Group, also known as Ketl, K-E-T-L, which is domiciled on the Isle of Man, which for our international listeners is a small rock in the Irish Sea, about 25 miles from where I'm sitting. And Strix has been listed on AIM for about 6-7 years. I must declare an interest. I used to provide them with advisory services until about 3 years ago. So I know the story reasonably well, but going back a few years, not in recent times. And this morning they had a massive profit warning and the shares are off 40%, 4-0. And I think they closed about 55 pence. And I think they've had an investor presentation this afternoon, which is accessible to any of our listeners, I think via Equity Development. And they've got themselves into a right old schmozzle because they've ended up with a lot of debt. Today they had their interim results and they guided down on full year expectations. And crucially for this company, they cut their dividend expectations by over 50%, 5-0. If you don't know Strix, then basically what they do, they are one of the world leaders in the provision of kettle controls. So whenever you switch on your kettle to make a cup of tea or a coffee, the thermostat within the kettle is probably a 50-50 chance it's been made by Strix or one of their subsidiaries, normally out of China. It's relatively low margin, but very high volume business. And they've got huge global market share. And what they don't know about kettles isn't worth knowing. And as you can imagine, for a long period of time, kettle controls was a low growth, but very high margin business to be in. But they came to market a few years ago and everybody was telling them they needed a growth story. You've got this great cash cow business, kettle controls, but you need growth. And you know a lot about filtration, you know a lot about water purification, you know a lot about the whole consumer demand for clean, environmentally sound kitchen products, hardware products, and you've got manufacturing capability. So just get on with it and come back to us when you've got a growth story and we'll get your shares up. So that's what the company have tried to do. And they made an acquisition last year. And they funded it with a share placing at 115. Billy is the acquisition. And before that, they bought an Italian business called Leica. Problem is, the debt's gone really high. And the bad news today is that the debt is 90-odd million. The profits are about 30, the debt's about 90, and the market cap today will be just over 100. So they think they've been doing the right thing to try and grow the business and diversify. Problem is, the core business has sort of flatlined or started to go down, and the debt levels are too high for public markets. One of the things we've talked about on the pod in recent months has been that public markets don't really like lots of debt. This company now has debt to EBITDA of about 2.7 times. Now, if it was owned by private equity, that wouldn't be a problem. In fact, they'd be encouraged to have more debt. But on public markets, particularly given interest rates, investors are worried about companies with a lot of debt, and they're also worried about the cost of that debt. Anyway, cut a long story short, shares have been slammed today. So why am I talking about this? Well, basically, if you look at the chart, and I would advise any of the listeners to look at the chart, This is a stock that got to £3.50 2 years ago, 350. It was a flavour of the month stock. They were doing all the right things. They had leverage, not as much as they have now, but they had leverage. It's totally fallen out of bed. Now, it must be said that cutting the dividend doesn't look good. And for many income-focused investors, that will be a serious red flag. And the debt is a problem. But the company doesn't, in my mind, go from being worth £3.50 to being worth 50. The truth is somewhere in the middle. So I think you've had a massive negative reaction today on the back of bad news. But underlying is a good business here with a really strong engineering franchise, really good engineering IP, both in the Isle of Man and in China. And I think this deal they did in Italy is a good deal, probably priced a bit high. And they've maybe made a few schoolboy errors in things they've done. But net-net, there's a really good engineering business in here. And I think it's probably oversold today on the back of the reaction down at 50p. So it's not for widows and orphans. It's not for people that need a big, reliable dividend because they've just cut the dividend. But if you like your engineering businesses, your tech engineering businesses, and you like companies that are well engineered and have a good footprint and are well in with all the big OEMs, this will be the lowest price that Strix has ever been. It IPO'd at a quid via Zeus back in 17, I think. And generally in that period, it's traded way ahead of 100. Just in the last 6-9 months, they've made a few schoolboy errors. And then today they've compounded it with a warning and the dividend cut. But this is not a flaky business. There's a real business here, high margins. They've just got capital allocation a bit wrong and execution's clearly fallen off a bit. So there will be pressure for some sort of breakup here to realise value if the shares stay at the 45-50p level. So this isn't a name I was going to talk about yesterday. When I looked at the RNSs today and saw the profit warning, I thought, wow, that's interesting. When I used to cover this stock, or when I used to work with the guys, I mean, I had a target price of 300p, and it's now 50. Now, what's changed since then is the debt, because of the acquisitions, some fairly weak execution around working capital. So the debt story is worse today than it was when I knew them. But what tends to happen when a company has a profit warning, proper company has a profit warning, you get the company doctors in. They look at the working capital. They look at the procurement. They look at the processes. They look at the cash flow, and they get it better. And management at this company have got quite a lot of skin in the game, and they'll be feeling it today. Mark Bartlett is the CEO. So that's my suggestion. It's not risk-free. It's been smashed today, but it's a quality name, and we're talking about takeovers in our market, and these guys won't hang around. If they feel the market doesn't value them appropriately, it'll go off market. So that's my name for everybody, Strix. The ticker is Kettle, for the Kettle Controls, K-E-T-L. And it's new, it's hot off the press because this story broke today. So that's probably my name for everybody to have a look at.
Thank you ever so much for that. Alex, any thoughts on the Kettle, mate? Because Henry, because it was so hot during COVID, everyone was talking about that was one of the names that was hot during 2019, 2020, 21, and it just went whoop, 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 and it just went off like that. And Alex pointed out about the water filter business that they purchased. That gave it another little spurt as well, because everyone's saying, oh, now it's got two businesses that it can grow. Is it something that you looked at, or?
I know the name. It's a very high quality business, like Alex says. I don't own any. I don't know why I don't own any, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't remember making a decision on it one way or the other. But what I would say is that they're not saying that their market has collapsed. It's not as though nobody's buying kettles anymore and they think they're on their back and this is the end of the game for them. They're just saying that their growth plans are going to slow down a little bit, which isn't the end of the world. They're not saying they're going to go bankrupt. They're not saying they can't pay their debt. They're not saying that their business has collapsed. that could be a really interesting turnaround stock. You know, like Alex says, not one to bet the house on for sure, but maybe tuck some away at the bottom of your portfolio and you might have a nice surprise in a few years.
Yeah, I think the what I always find with these sort of companies, and Alex touched on it without getting down to the nub of it, is that this is a business that's been around forever. It's in, I use the word loosely, in bed with all the OEMs, or the large corporates go to them as one of the bespoke companies to utilize for kettle controls. So they've got the IP, they've potentially got X amount of patents. There's value in all of that historical stuff as well. So it's going to be one of them that someone's sitting there watching going, let's just see what happens now over the next 3 months, 6 months. And at some point or other, it's going to get taken out. Or they'll say, you know what, as Alex said, you don't value us, we'll just take it back to private. Yeah. The larger shareholders will take it back off market and do what they need to do with it. May not even allow the private equity people to steal it at a lowly cost. So yeah, definitely one I would definitely be looking over the next couple of weeks or so, with a view to
historically the
arbitrage
business,
its long-term value. Sorry, Alex, go.
I mean, historically, the business has been very profitable. It's generated margins in the high 20s, 30s. Very well-run company. But it's generally been run for cash flow, not for growth.
Yep.
They've then pivoted to try and get growth because they wanted the higher valuation. And unfortunately, they've come a bit of a cropper. But it is a well-run business. Management have skin in the game. They'll be hurting on the back of today. So it's not without risk because it has blown up, obviously. But sometimes, what's that expression, you know, it's always darkest before the dawn. In other words, they've had the really bad news today and the market's thrown it out the window. But there's more value in there than we're seeing. So yeah. Kettle. I like, as a general strategy, when I'm investing, I like to have one or two stocks that are turnaround stocks or that are sort of not hated, but are not popular or have had a warning, because you tend to get quite extreme reactions. A bit like you, Pete, recently with your Serato on Disco. You know that there's a business there, but it's also been smashed. So
absolutely, when it works well, mate, that's great. But my problem is that ordinarily I want to turn around stock. I go in there, I buy it, and it doesn't turn around. It just keeps walking away in the opposite direction, and the share price just goes lower and lower. So you've got to be ever so careful, and you've got to do your due diligence and do your research. But the thing is, the turnarounds ordinarily don't happen at the pace that we want them to. So you've got to be, like Henry keeps saying, you've got to be happy for the stock market to close for 3 years or 5 years. And maybe then you'll get the return. You won't get it in 3 months or 6 months, you know, because markets just analyze. And you're in favor. Sentiments, everybody's on your back going, this is the best stock since sliced bread. And then when that switch goes, everyone's going, and no one on Twitter owns it anymore, right? No one on social media is talking about it anymore. And I think Kettle's going to be one of them stocks that everyone goes, never heard of it. I never owned it. Or it's a former holding of mine. So it could be one of them that stays on love for a little while. I think it's going to, because of what it's done and how it's gone about its business, I don't see it drifting to no man's land. I think it's going to base relatively soon because of what it's done. The intrinsic value is there. It's clear as mud. It's there. But no one likes a profit warning, and people will run for the hills when they do. And it's the profit warnings we have on AIM and FTSE, they're always overreactions, they're always extreme. I see the profit warning, I'm thinking, oh gosh, how much is that going to get hit today? You know, and as I said months and months ago, you get a good outcome, you get 15 to 25% pop if you're lucky, right? You get a bad outcome, you're looking at 30 to 50%, and it's just halved over the course of 2 days. So there's an opportunity abounds in our markets right now. And Kettle could definitely be another one. Strix could definitely be another one. Very well connected company. Henry, what's your stop for the day, mate? One of two, I hope.
One of two, absolutely. I'm going to start with my UK pick, if I may, which is RHI Magnesita. The ticker is RHIM. I love the baffled look.
Who? Say that again. Say that again.
RHI Magnesita. It's a £1.35 billion company engaged in the refractory mining industry. They mine, produce, and sell over 120,000 high-grade refractory products, which are used for high-temperature processes in industry. So think steel-making, glass-making, that sort of thing, high-pressure, high-temperature type processes. The products range from bricks and lining mixers to flow control products such as slide gates, nozzles, plugs, that sort of stuff. They have over, I think it's about 35 production and raw material sites around the world, and half a dozen R&D technology centres where they're testing out these products and developing new ones and so on in different conditions. The company has had about 11% compound annual growth in revenue over the last couple of years, 24% compound annual growth rate in earnings per share, and generates a 10% return on capital employed. It pays a nice 4% dividend, which is 2x covered. And I think that is a really interesting industrial name. I've had my eye on a few industrial stocks in the last 6 months or so. They are unloved because people have got fears about the economic outlook. And so some of the big industrial names have sold off, and I think they've been oversold. So RHI Magnesita, the ticker is RHIM. Go away, have a look. Let me know, do you love it? Do you hate it? Be interested to hear your thoughts on it.
I'm just lost on that one. any thoughts, Alex, on that one?
My thought is I need to go and sit in a dark room with an iPad and do some research and then come back next week or the week after. I feel intellectually very weak on this one.
I'm just sitting here going, I had to hear the name twice. I'm thinking, that's embarrassing again. I don't know who that is, where it is. Just carry on. Tell me a bit more, Henry. I need to be educated about this one.
I think the thing to bear in mind, the UK historically has had some really interesting industrial assets. So a few weeks ago, we had... who's the assay miner? Johnson Matthey. And the shares had a bit of a pop as a foreign investor decided they were going to take a 10% stake in it. You know, there are private equity names out there and big industrial conglomerates that are looking at UK industrial assets and seeing a lot of value. Historically, we've had some absolutely fantastic engineering businesses, some great manufacturing companies. There's a lot of technical expertise in the UK. It's not all, you know, banks and financial services companies. And so this has had me looking at the industrial sector quite closely. And RHI, it's a very, very high quality name, but it's not a name that you're going to hear a lot of people talking about. I'd not come across it until I started doing a bit of research for the show. And I think the thing I like about them, the sort of products, with 120,000 products in the range, they've clearly got a very diversified customer base, but these are the sorts of things that other companies can't do without. You know, if you've got a manufacturing line for steel and the slide gate goes on the pouring line, the whole line shuts down. You need to replace that immediately. If you bought one from RHI previously, you'll go straight back and you'll just buy another one. You won't quibble about the price. You won't quibble about what the competitors are doing. You will just go and buy what you know works. And RHI has been listed for years, you know, very, very big, well-known company in the industrial space. I think that's quite a defensive pick, to be honest. They're not really the sort of products that you can do without. An awful lot of them have got a safety aspect to them, you know, flow control in particular. If you can't control the flow of something like molten iron, molten steel, you've got a big problem on your hand very, very fast. Not only do you have the downtime from the production line not working, but potentially you've got fatalities on your hand if your production line is not controlled properly.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Cool. Well, it's a metal fabrication company, Metal Basher. Alex and I have spent quite a lot, and you've spent quite a lot of time in the Midlands. We should know about it. Not sure what they do regarding nationally, but I will definitely be looking at that one, Henry. Thank you for another embarrassing stock that I do not know much about or anything about. I feel like I'm gonna have to put a little dunce hat on here when you start going on about the US and UK stocks. Brilliant, mate. Thank you ever so much for bringing that one to our attention. I'm going to talk now about an arbitrage. I think an arbitrage opportunity is around our market regarding this particular stock. It's one that most people know about. And I'm talking about it because there's some dissenting voices about this particular company. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it. I think most people know about it already. It's not a Henry stock where you have to scratch your head and go, I haven't got a Scooby-Doo, I've never heard about that stock. The company's name is Elementis, and the ticker symbol is ELM. Market cap, £724 million. Price range of 85 pence to 130. Currently priced at 123, up 14%. But this has caught my eye over the last couple of weeks because they're, and well, last week as well, is because there's always been said that this is a company that's been completely overlooked and undervalued, and it's spent a lot of money over the past umpteen years. And the market cap's currently at 724, as I said, £724 million. They've spent something like £860 million buying two companies historically, 2017, 2018. And now the sum of the parts is worth less than what they started with 6-7 years ago when they purchased these two companies. So you've got Franklin Mutual Advisors basically saying, put the sale sign up. We've had enough. We're very disappointed with you. We hold 9.8% of the company. And on the behalf of our clients since 2020, and you as a specialist chemicals company, you've let us down. So immediately and publicly announce a sales process. You know, put yourself up for sale. Everyone's buying everything right now in the UK. You're undervalued. Let's get a premium and let's get out of here, you know. And then you've had Odyssea, if that's pronounced right. I'm sure Alex will tell me. Capital have come out. They've got 3.5% of Elementis as well. And they've also said, you know, we agree. We think you should put yourself up for sale. So given where it's at now, it's up 14% year to date, 12 months, sorry. I suspect that if a bid comes, some of the parts will be nearer to, above the £1.50 range. That gives you a minimum of 20% on the current price. As Alex said, if somebody wants to really take out a company, they need to be bidding possibly 30%. So that gives you then a price of more than £1.60 versus what the price is now at £1.23. So could there be a bid? Should we just buy a stock purely for the bid situation? Absolutely not. It is a solid company. It's in a specialist chemical space where ordinarily when things are better, the macro conditions are better, these sort of companies sit at a premium to where they are sitting right now. The other one in this sort of space is where most of my dad's wealth is Croda, and they've been spanked since peaking at over £100. And he's giving me a phone call every other week saying, why do you tell me to sell them? I'm saying, Dad, you've never listened to me in the past. Why would you ever listen to me when I said to you to sell them at £100? And now they're at 50 odd, he's saying, yeah, all right, fair enough. I wouldn't have listened to you anyway. But this is a tiddler compared to Croda, £724 million. I think there's a possibility that something, activism, may stoke them into action going forward. Thoughts, gents?
Yeah, I mean, what have the company been saying, Pete? Are they quiet about all of this, or what's the sort of narrative?
Well, I think the main thing is their response. I think it was, where are we now? 21st on Wednesday, was basically saying, yeah, we hear what you're saying regarding these actions. We're going to engage with shareholders. We're focused on delivering value for shareholders. The board agrees that, you know, Elementis has got attractive assets, but bear with us. You know, we're in the business to achieve the best possible outcomes for all shareholders. But I think there's going to be, if more of the shareholders that are on the register above 1.5%, above 3%, start saying the same thing, I think they'll start to look at how they can streamline the company, if not trigger some sort of value creation regarding the stock. So the response they came out to the Franklin letter on yesterday was one of, we hear you, we're going to do something about it. We realize that, you know, we have got valuable and attractive assets that could be potentially valuable to somebody else, but just give us a bit of time to sort it out. I don't think they're going to get that time, honestly. You know, these activist companies and then private equities, what do they do? If you're not going to get on with it, we're going to put somebody, parachute somebody onto the board, and then we'll start doing it from internally. So, yeah.
Well, I would say, with my fund manager hat on, it feels as though you're sort of underpinned on the downside here. In other words, the story is de-risked because you've got two or three pretty, you know, you've got activists who are fairly clear about what they want and what they tend to do. And so the company is sort, I mean, it's not in play, but it's looking like it might get in play quite soon. Again, I like stories like that because there's going to be a catalyst. You know, what's your downside? So yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. They've got a capital markets day on the 14th of November. So anyone that's been triggered by, you know, Odyssean and Franklin kicking off will be attending that capital markets day, you know, and actually asking some very, very difficult questions to the board. So yeah. I suspect that betwixt now and Easter, something's going to happen regarding that particular stock. Will they still be independent? Given what the amount of companies that we're losing, it would be great if they are. But I suspect they're going to have to start being on their toes. They can't just allow the share price to languish at the levels that it's at right now.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Alex, back to you, mate, for your second stock, if you've got one. Well, one that you already thought about prior to Wednesday and not actually, just triggered off for today.
Well, it's not really a stock to recommend. It's more just to flag that we've had another entry into the list of companies IPOing in the US. It's a company called Instacart, which I guess is a bit of a US delivery, maybe, or something along those lines. IPO price was $30, market value $8.5 billion. So compared to Arm, it's a tiny company, and it probably isn't that well known here in the UK. But I make the point that basically, if Arm and Instacart go relatively well in the aftermarket in terms of share prices, You could be looking at quite a lot of Q4 IPO activity in the US. And in general, in the UK, we're a little bit bereft of big tech, as it were. We've got quite a few little tech companies, but we haven't got much big tech. So if people like collectives or pooled investment stories, just keep an eye on NASDAQ in the US for Q4, because you could see quite a lot of IPO activity in the US. It will require, I think, Arm to have a reasonable aftermarket, and now Instacart as well. Personally, I'm not a big fan, it must be said, of delivery companies as a general rule, in terms of the economics. I find the economics a little bit shaky. But nevertheless, if this Instacart IPO works out, then I think, we'll see markets properly reopen back end of this quarter into the beginning of next year. So it's really just a flag that that IPO has taken place in the US, and sort of watch this space for how it performs. Clearly, the best performing sector in the US this year has been tech. A little bit of mean reversion, because of course it was a dog of a sector last year when rates were going up. Everybody wanted energy, nobody wanted tech. But we've had a bit of a flip in 2023, and I could see that continuing into next year, if I'm being honest, because although it's gone a little bit quiet on the ChatGPT AI front, I think we all know that it's a massive theme. It isn't going to go away. And frankly, for most investors in the UK, the best way to get exposure to it is probably out of a US ETF or a US fund or a US stock. So that was really my observation, Pete. I don't really have another UK small cap to talk about. I think one of the ones you talked about a few weeks ago, not small cap, mid cap, Dunelm had a reasonable trading update the other day, worth flagging that. And although we had a warning today from Kettle and Strix, I think on balance, most updates I'm seeing in the UK market are sort of okay. There's the odd horror profit warning. S4, which we've talked about, had a warning again.
You're not allowed to mention S4,
Alex. Yeah, we banned
you're
ourselves.
Not allowed to, no, you're not allowed to mention it. Look at Henry's face.
I can see Henry kicking me under the table.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point, sorry, the finishing point would be, given how much these companies have had thrown at them in terms of the interest rate cycle and inflation and cost of living crisis, if you're going to break, you're going to break about now. But it feels to me as though overall there aren't dozens and dozens of profit warnings. There are enough, but there aren't loads. There are some very good companies out there that appear to be quite resilient. So I think we're at the point of sort of near maximum pain for corporates in the UK right now. So anybody that's coming out of a reasonable update right now is probably going to be okay into next year. That's my feeling.
It's a brave call, mate. That's a strong call. I'm gonna note that down, mate. 21st of
Yeah.
September.
Hold
Wow. Go for it. Go for it, Alex. Confidence there in the market. Okie
Throw
dokie.
that back at me. Throw that back at me early next year.
Okie dokie. Henry, what's your second stop, mate?
I've got another US favorite.
Okie dokie.
Vivas.
I don't know anything about it. Go on, I'll just sit down here and listen.
Viva Systems, the ticker is VWEV. And this is one that Peter's going to love. It hits two of his favorites. It's a £27 billion market cap provider of IT cloud solutions for the global life sciences industry. The company's
Do know this one, Henry?
offerings, you do know it.
Whoop, whoop. I
Excellent.
do know it. Go on. Go
No
on.
blank looks. The company's
Cool.
offerings span cloud software, data, and consulting services to implement cloud software and solutions that include clinical, regulatory, and safety functions of life science businesses, all built on the proprietary Veeva Vault platform. They've also got a commercial cloud systems team, which provides solutions for sales, medical affairs, and marketing functions in the life sciences industry. The business has had a 25% compound annual growth rate in revenue over the last 5 years, a 26% and a half compound annual growth rate in earnings per share. It generates a 10% return on capital employed. And most favorably of all, it's on net cash of $3.8 billion. So you've got no worries about this thing going bankrupt anytime soon. I really like the company as it's a great play on both the IT and the life sciences sector. It's a little bit like owning the picks and shovels of the industry. It's used by sort of the industry standard, I think, for an awful lot of life sciences businesses. Very reliable, high quality suite of IT solutions for companies. And so you can get in on the industry without having to necessarily take the speculative risk of early stage pharmaceuticals development businesses and drug testing companies. I think it's a really, really interesting company, well worth having a look at for anybody interested in the space.
Good call. Good company, good stock, good metrics over the last umpteen years. It's going to be one of them again because it's a US listed sort of tech company, life sciences tech company. That our sort of UK based individuals that are looking at the first thing they're going to look at is look at the PE, and it's high 50s, and they're going to go, that's a bit too high for me. I want something in the 20s and 30s. And then they're going to look at the price to sales. Again, 15 times sales. They're going to go, that's a bit too high for me. Price to book. But as I said before, I've said this historically, you know, going back to William O'Neill's book, up until 1999, I was reading everything that was, you know, buy a low PE stock, buy a company that's the sevens and sevens, 5% and 7% yield, 7% PE, you're safe, you'll do fine. And then I read O'Neill's book and it was like, you need to buy the higher PE stocks because they're going to outperform every single thing else that's going to be out there. We've seen that with Apple. We've seen it with Microsoft. We've seen that with Alphabet. You know, Nvidia now is like the stock that everyone's raving about, you know, 200 and odd PE. Nobody wants to, you know, wants to buy that. You know, the adage is that you've got to be around for the next 200 years to get any return on that company if you're buying it right now. But they keep going higher until they don't, you know. That's another interesting one, Henry. I haven't looked at it for a little while, but it's one I do know about. And it's in a space where, you know, I've said before, and I said this back, I don't know, 2018, 2019, when I was speaking with John Newman and Phil Oakley, I said, you know, I'm staying with AstraZeneca because it's an AI stock. They're going, you what? It's a pharma company. It's about, no. You've got to look at what they're doing and how they're doing it and how they're getting their results for the data, to crunch the data, to skip phase two and go, we're no longer going with phase two on that one. We've been in it and we're going to go to the next one. So they're crunching all those numbers. And obviously, Veev is one of that highly respected to get to that size, yeah, to be working with all those mega caps. So they're highly respected. So good call, mate. Is it too rich for the UK investors? Possibly. Is it one of them that they're going to watch go higher? Quite possibly. You know what I mean? Any thoughts there, Alex, regarding our US stock that is brought to us, Veeva Systems?
Yeah, I mean, I would classify Veeva along with the likes of Palantir, Adobe, big Snowflake, you know, the big enterprise software businesses in the US. And they're generally, as you say, Pete, they're generally on very high PE multiples, but they are typically valued actually on the basis of revenue multiples or SaaS revenue multiples, which can be well into the double digits. So I think Henry will validate this. I mean, this thing will be trading on about 11 times revenue, forward revenue. But actually,
that sounds about right.
That's at the low end of the peer group. That's at the bottom end of the peer group, if you were to benchmark Snowflake or Palantir, Cloudflare, Samsara. So these prices can look very scary, particularly from a UK point of view. But actually, they're bottom quartile in terms of valuation in the States. So to some extent, you have to sort of cross your fingers and hope that you're not caught out by these multiples. But that is the going valuation in the US. Yeah, I mean, I like enterprise software as a sector. these guys have got a great end market. They've been around. The risk profile is pretty low, let's be honest. So yeah, I would endorse that. They're also based in a small town in California where they probably employ half the people. And the town is called Pleasant Town. Pleasant Town.
Oh, lovely. Like,
wow, it's nice. Nice.
So yeah, like Viva.
Yeah, cool. Nice one. I think the other thing as well is that I would probably go away now and look at who the UK institutions are that have bought into that, irrespective of the PE and the multiples there, because that's also a good sign, because we've got so many institutions now that are buying into the US tech plays, life sciences plays, and they're happy to pay that multiple because it's at the quality end of the market. Are you with me? So Henry, I'll be looking at having a look at that. I'm going to go in the completely opposite direction now, Henry, right? And this is a stock that you will know of, but the PE is way down here, mate, way down here, right? You can afford to buy 25% of your portfolio on this stock, mate. That's not a recommendation, folks, by the way. I'm only joshing. Right, but this stock has got a PE of 6, a yield of 0.72. Yeah, a market cap of 143 million, a price range of £2.80 to £4.28, and its shares are up 30% year to 30% in the last 12 months. Which stock could that be? BP Marsh. BP Marsh doesn't get talked about a lot. Doesn't get talked about a lot, but it's probably owned and run by one of the most well-known sages of the commercial insurance game. Mr. Marsh runs the company, and basically they invest in other insurance companies and other tech-related entities and so on and so on and so forth. And it's a company sitting there just chugging along, doing its business. The biggest deal they've done, I think it's called Kentro. Is it Kentro? In fact, I'm trying to scramble my notes here, basically, to get it. But Kentro, yeah, invested X amount in it and then sold it recently. It's still going through all the approvals for 51 million. I think they invested 15 into that one. So it makes investments, exits, swaps its stakes, so, and just keeps doing that. But essentially, right now, at £3.85, they're doing buybacks. The plan is there's 51 million that's going to come back into the company. They're going to then phase it back, some of that money back to shareholders over the next 2-3 years. So they've got that plan to do that alongside buybacks. So I just thought it's a very, very intriguing sort of company and what they're doing. And the fact it got such a significant person at the helm of the company, I just thought it was a very, very interesting company. And, you know, this is one of the companies where the other individuals that are in the investing insurance space are coming to them to see if they want to do a deal. They're not going out chasing all these companies going, oh, we'd like to buy you. Some of them are coming to Marsh to say, we love what you do. We'd like to take some money, you know, like you to take a stake in our company and help us go forward. And they're vetting all these companies going, yeah, we'll invest in that one. No, thank you to you. We'll invest in that one. No, thank you to you. Very, very interesting company. It's not a tiddler, but it is a tiddler at 143 million. Profitable. I know Henry's always asking me whether they've got cash. Got cash, Henry. Yeah, not in debt.
Excellent. Big take.
Doing buybacks and supporting a nice, well, I'd say a nice, a little bit of dividend yield on it as well, with special dividends being pushed on regarding this particular sale they've done regarding the Kentro bit. But they're always making new investments and turning stock over. So, yeah, just another one there for you guys to investigate. Not a tip, not a recommendation, just a research idea. Brian Marsh is the go-to guy regarding that commercial side of insurance. He's 82 years of age or thereabouts, still going strong, loves the market, loves doing a deal. There's more to come with this one. Is it one you've heard of, Alex?
Yeah, it is. I think when I was working for Pamela Gordon a decade ago, I think we were their brokers or advisors. And I think one of my friends, Barry, used to be their analyst. So it is a name I've heard of. It is a name I know a little bit about. And it is the insurance company in the UK is very interesting. It seems to be one of those industries that we're really very good at, and we operate off the radar. And you get these fellas like Brian Marsh, who just know absolutely everybody. And it's far cleverer than I could ever be. And yeah, but I won't pretend on the call just now that I've got a considered investment view. But yes, the name has been around, and a lot of shrewd judges have invested in it for sure.
Okie dokie. Thank you for that. You're fading out a little bit there. Sorry, Alex. Any thoughts, Henry, on that one?
I love it. I think that's a wonderful pick. High quality. I like the fact it pays a dividend. I like the fact it's net cash. I love the model of acquiring small businesses, doing them up and selling them on. There are a few in the market. I can't think off the top of my head. I've got the feeling there's an engineering one out there.
I think you're thinking of Melrose historically.
I
which
am
is what they were
of
doing.
Melrose. That's it.
Buy and build sort of model. Yeah.
Now, if you can do that well for a long period of time, wonderful. Really, really great. You're helping the economy, you're helping jobs, you're helping other companies, you're helping your shareholders. I love it as a business model.
Yeah, throw off a lot.
That's a really interesting
cash.
Company.
I don't hold it. It's one I've got on my radar to have a look at. I'm a bit peeved that I didn't buy it 12 months ago before it started its 30% run.
Yeah.
that is ordinarily the case, you know what I mean? I don't tend to go looking in that insurance space, you know, until recently. So, yeah. Right, gents, I'm going to briefly talk about our Memphis charity, which some of you have been helping us out on again. So I'm really, really, really thankful and grateful to you all. We've had two further donations, one from Michael Van Wensveen. I hope I haven't butchered that. Michael, thank you ever so much for your donation. Love your podcast. Great to see Wheelie again. Your positivity and kindness is great to watch. Thank you for that, Michael. Thank you for your £20 donation and £5 gift aid to Memphis. Also, our good friend Sanjay Korea at Sanj Korea on Twitter. Thank you for all you do. You have helped everyone learn and progress forwards in the investing world. Your podcast is pretty good too. And Sanj donated £100 and £25 gift aid. So thank you ever so much, Michael.
Chaps.
Thank you ever so much, Sanj. I'll hopefully be speaking with Sanj in a couple of weeks' time, because there's an event I'm going to be sorting out, or a meeting I'm going to be sorting out with a very, very important person. I'm going to have a couple of people join me on that particular meetup in about November time. So I'll be speaking to a few select individuals. I want to mention Powder Monkey Brewery as well, because we're getting towards the end of September, October time, bonfire night and all the rest of it, and Christmas beers and spirits and so on and so forth. So if you're planning any events between now and Crimbo, please head down to www.powdermonkeybrewing.com and make a purchase towards your ales and beers and all the rest. I know Henry and his father-in-law have been serial purchasers, I know, of that particular one, utilising their 5% discount code. So, Alex, if you fancy a discount, please head down there. And then, obviously, we've got our book sponsors, Harriman House, at www.harrimanhouse. We're still waiting for our two winners to get in touch regarding our July win. I think one of them was called, I forget the name now, something blue pill, something or other. And the other one was Paul Bye. So please get in touch with me regarding winning those two, well, the month of July and August regarding the stock. I'll dig out the names in a minute.
I was going to say, I've got them in front of me. The July winner was Paul BAI123. And August's winner was Blue Pill 979. So yes, please do get in touch. We're desperate to give away the prizes, guys. So don't be strangers.
Absolutely. Now I've covered everything other than asking you all once again to continue with your positive feedback and giving us the feedback that you've given us so far. Thank you ever so much for supporting us continually. Please, please, please go to YouTube and just hit the subscribe button for us, please, and keep supporting us. And give us a feedback on this show. Tell us what you liked about it and all the rest of it. I've got one further thing to say before we close, but I'm going to go to Henry first, then Alex, to make a comment about anything else they want to share before we close this off.
Quick one from me, guys. I've been a little bit quiet on YouTube recently. I apologise. I think we've had quite a few comments saying I've not been as quick responding to them as I'd like. I've been a bit quicker on Twitter. Please don't stop. Absolutely makes my day. I've had some lovely messages. We all have. Very much appreciate it. And again, thank you very much to the two donors to Memphis. It's very, very much appreciated. So thank you very much to our audience.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think I want to give a big shout out now. I'm sure you won't like it, but to Nicholas Vaughan for his continued positivity and continued sort of feedback that he gives us almost on every single podcast. He always finds something positive to tell us about the podcast. So thank you ever so much for that, Nicholas. Take care. God bless you, sir. Alex?
Not a lot to add, guys, other than to wish everybody a lovely weekend. And see you soon.
Okie dokie. I want to close this with some news for you all. I want to thank you all for supporting this particular podcast. Unfortunately, it would appear that we will no longer be joined on this podcast by Mr. Wheelie Dealer due to his health and his personal circumstances and wishing to pursue other adventures. So this has been a format that we've been testing for a little while. With this, I think was possibly foreseen as well some months ago. This is the format we're going to go with. This is three co-hosts that are going to be running this particular podcast going forward of Henry Viola Hare at HD Viola and Alex De Groot at De Groot Media and myself, Peter Higgins at Conquest 3. We look forward to you continuing to support us and we wish Wheelie Dealer all the very best with everything he does going forward, and to thank him for his insights and knowledge that he shared with us over the years up until this point. All right, guys, that's it for me. Henry, thank you very much. Thank you, Alex, who's already bombed off. I think his signal's gone again. Take care. God bless. And we'll see you in October. Bye-bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.